There is too much on the line, and we must not wake up the day after the election and have any regrets about what we could have done in these next 9 days.
On issue after issue, Kamala broke it, but I will fix it. We're going to fix it.
Yeah, I don't think when I wake up the day after the election, I'm going to be upset. How are you, everybody? The John and Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yeah, let's not get cocky. Let's not get overconfident.
Checkered flag. One more big lap for the whole world here.
We still have another lap to run.
That's a good answer. One lap to go.
But boy, is it looking bleak for Team Kamala. And man, oh man, is it looking good for Team Trump. Welcome to the October 28th edition of the John Carlson Show. So nice to have you with me. If there is anything that you would like to talk about or anything you'd like to sound off about, whether you want to do it by voice or by text, just let me know at 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. It was a very strong weekend for Donald Trump, two respects. First of all, he went on Joe Rogan's show. Joe Rogan is one of the most fascinating media personalities in America. He was he a UFC fighter before he became a commentator, or was he just a commentator?
He may have been a kind of an amateur, but he was always one of the commentator play-by-play guys.
And a very colorful, very popular UFC commentator. And then he started a podcast, and it has now become the most popular podcast in the country.
I always thought podcasts were like limited certain amount of time, but you're going to share how long that went Friday, I hear.
Well, it went for 3 hours.
3 hour podcast.
Donald Trump sat in with Joe Rogan for 3 hours. Now, Kamala Harris, her campaign had made noise that they were going to be on Joe Rogan too. And last week, they confirmed that she will not be appearing on the Joe Rogan show. And I'm thinking to myself, can you imagine Kamala on with Joe Rogan for 3 hours?
Well, they probably said, we need at least 3 hours content. Can you fill? Oh, don't have enough. It's not going to work.
No, I don't think it would work. Anyway, by the way, it is so wonderful. I know a lot of you, when you see Donald Trump on television, he's at a rally, so he's yelling, or he's being, you know, provocative or bombastic. And there was some of that, you know, at the Madison Square Garden rally yesterday. But what's really enlightening is when you just hear Donald Trump having a conversation. And if you watch the Joe Rogan show, you'd say to yourself, man, this guy knows a lot about a lot. He's far better informed and has a wide breadth of knowledge, wider breadth of knowledge than I ever would have guessed. And the self-deprecating sense of humor, I mean, he just came across as very confident and very much in command. And you have to be when you're up against Rogan. Rogan's a very smart guy. And he's not endorsing in this particular contest, like the Washington Post and the LA Times are not endorsing. That's another hit for Kamala. She was expecting the in-house media organ of the Democratic Party in the nation's capital, the Washington Post, to endorse her. Jeff Bezos said, no, the newspaper should not be making an endorsement for president. And so now he's got a mutiny on his hands. People are leaving. People are threatening to leave. He should say, go ahead. But anyway, same thing is happening in the LA Times with their publisher. He announced, we're just not going to endorse in that race. Some newspapers, by policy, don't endorse. They just don't make political endorsements, or at least presidential endorsements. The LA Times and the Washington Post are famous for making endorsements, and like the New York Times, they're drearily predictable. They always go for the Democrat. And this year, their publishers said, we're not going to. So now they're having a snit fit, and they're losing subscribers and all that. And to which I can only say, first of all, why do you think a newspaper endorsement for president really matters that much anymore? Joe Rogan has a wider circulation than the Washington Post and the LA Times combined. But the other part about this, and we'll play you some clips a little later on here from Joe Rogan, is that Trump just really comes across very impressive, in a very impressive way. So then you have that followed by the Madison Square Garden rally, which was, get this, there were 20,000 people in the arena. There were more than 50,000 people outside Madison Square Garden. Outside Madison Square Garden. More than 50,000 others couldn't get in. They knew that their people wouldn't be able to get in, so they had huge jumbotrons playing the rally. Now, it may have been even more than that because they had 98,000 cell phones, 98,473 cell phones. I guess you can count them, but you know, by the signals, in Madison Square Garden and around the immediate vicinity of Madison Square Garden. So at the garden and right around the garden, there were over 98,000 cell phones. It was huge. And here is part of what Donald Trump had to say last night.
This election is a choice between whether we will have four more years of gross incompetence and failure, or whether we will begin the four greatest years in the history of our country. We will achieve success that no one can imagine. We will have the strongest economy, the most secure borders, the safest cities, the most powerful military, the best trade deals, and we will dominate the frontiers of science, medicine, business, technology, and space. And I'm asking you to be excited about the future of our country again. Dream big again. We're going to dream big again. We haven't been dreaming big at all. This will be America's new golden age. It's going to happen quickly, too, very quickly.
And he wrapped it all up with this.
We bleed the same blood. We share the same home. And we salute the same great American flag. We are one people, one family, and one glorious nation under God. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never, ever back down. And we will never, ever, ever, ever surrender. Together we will fight, 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 and we will win, win, win. We're going to win, win, win. November 5th will be the most important day in the history of our country. And together we will make America powerful again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America healthy again. We will make America strong again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again. Thank you, New York. God bless you. God bless you all. Thank you.
Here is John Fetterman. John Fetterman is the Democratic U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania. Remember, this is the guy who had the stroke and was badly incapacitated, and eventually he's come out of the stroke. And he was formerly the lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania. And so he knows Pennsylvania voters and Pennsylvania politics pretty good. He's got a pretty good grasp on those. He's got a very deep appreciation for Pennsylvania voters. Here is what he said during a radio broadcast about Trump in Pennsylvania, which is a absolute must win for the Democrats. They won't win the presidency if they lose Pennsylvania. And a state that isn't a must win, but is a very, very important win for the Republicans. Here's Senator Fetterman.
There's a difference between not understanding, but also acknowledging that it exists. And anybody spends time driving around and you can see the intensity, it's astonishing. I was doing an event in Indiana County, very, very red, and there was a superstore of Trump stuff, and it was 100 feet long, and it was dozens of T-shirts and hats and bumper stickers and all kinds of, I mean, it's like, where does this all come from? It's the kinds of thing that has taken on its own life on that. And it's like something very special exists there. And that doesn't mean that I admire it. It's just like, it's real.
Has anyone seen a Kamala Harris superstore? Has anyone seen a store where they sell Kamala Harris swag? There are, by the way, lots of these Trump stores around the country. I will admit, I haven't seen one in King County, but I've seen them in other places outside King County. There is something happening in this country. It's not just a lot of support for Donald Trump. It's the intensity of the support for Donald Trump. Now, Kamala Harris was also campaigning over the weekend, and she had a rally in Houston, and they were widely advertising that Beyonce was going to be there. And you might recall the Democratic National Convention. There were, quote, rumors that Beyonce was going to be making an appearance and maybe performing at the national convention on the final night when Kamala would be there. So, of course, lots of people tuned in because Beyonce is next to Taylor Swift, maybe the most popular entertainer in the country, definitely up there. And she was a no-show. Basically, they were floating the rumor that Beyonce was going to be there at the national convention just to goose the numbers, the ratings. And people felt a little bit exploited, taken advantage of. Well, they did the same thing with her rally in Houston. Beyonce is going to be, you don't want to miss Beyonce. She's going to be there at the Kamala rally. And sure enough, this time, Beyonce was there, but only to introduce Kamala. And right after Beyonce introduced Kamala and left the podium, this was the reaction from the crowd.
So listen, Texas, we have 11 days left in one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime. Voting has already started, and we know this will be a tight race until the very end.
Oh, man.
Okay. So here's the thing. Okay, so we got work to do.
Yeah, you got work to do. That was the crowd at the Kamala rally. I guess you could say it was a noisy crowd. I was just hearing a lot of complaining and where's Beyonce and booing and everything.
Just observation real quick, John.
Yeah.
Where's Doug? Does Doug, her husband, attend? You never hear anything about it. I'm watching Melania right now. You know, she was at a Republican convention, didn't say anything, didn't get on stage. After the assassination, you know, she had a statement supporting her husband. And then she was on Fox News, you know, promoting her new book. And now I hear she's going to be, you know, doing it again. So she got...
I think she was at the rally last night.
In Madison Square Garden. She was there. She spoke.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it's just like the confidence she has when she's speaking now, she's not following a script. It's just, if you haven't watched her speak, I mean, I'm very impressed with what she has shared, and I'm hoping she gets to speak a little more.
Yes. No, she is a very, very
But where's Doug?
Woman.
I haven't seen, is the hubby around?
How do we put this politely? He's got some baggage that isn't wearing well. And we can talk about that a little bit later. I didn't know you were going to bring it up. But no, with some credibly alleged domestic violence accusations.
Okay,
in
see,
his
I'm
past.
I didn't know all this, and I'm sure our listeners are like, which, wow, what?
Which has resulted in him being kind of moved to the sidelines there, a lower profile.
So important, this radio show every day.
20 minutes after 6, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yes, we will be getting into your calls and your comments via text at 206-421-5757. First, Philip J. Vandervoort III, right around the corner with a social media sweep. Good morning. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is 25 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, Monday morning. Man, what a week. Starting off real fast, real quick, real hot. It's going to only get quicker, only get hotter this week. Final closing arguments in the race for president and every other race that's going on out there. What's happening, Philip J. Vandervoort III, the social media world?
Well, I had something I wanted to hit on in this segment that you actually touched on a little bit in the last segment, and this is the Washington Post. And I think you mentioned the LA Times decided not to endorse a candidate for president. I hadn't missed the LA Times one, but late Friday, after your show Friday, the Washington Post decision started floating around and had a lot of people chattering. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Some of that chatter that I saw about this Washington Post newspaper decision not to endorse a candidate for president was a response from one of the libertarian writers that I follow, a guy named Nick Gillespie at Reason.com. And he pointed out that for 20 years, Reason has done something where they don't have the publication make an endorsement on the candidate for president. What they do is they have all of their editors submit a short summary of who they're voting for president and why. And he suggested that's what the Washington Post should do. And as you were talking about in the last segment, if the LA Times is not going to do an endorsement and they're going to give whatever the reason is, they should do what Reason.com has been doing, which is say, have all your individual editorial board contributors put down in writing who they're voting for and why. And then you'd know that everybody on the editorial board at Washington Post is probably going to vote for Kamala Harris. They just don't want to collectively come out and say that they are.
And it would also reveal the bias.
Sure, right?
Okay.
Or at least it would let you know where it's coming from.
Because, and if you follow the Post, you pretty much know
yeah,
that overwhelmingly liberal.
Guess.
And so they say, gee, how about this? There's, you know, 14 people in the Post editorial department, and 13 of them are voting for Kamala, and the others voting for Jill Stein. Look, that's what they don't want. They don't want 14 little endorsement vignettes all going for the same candidate. They want the institution, the Washington Post newspaper, with its collection of Pulitzer Prize.
Good point.
From the past.
Yep, they're going to brag about that, aren't they?
You know, handing down its considered judgment that Kamala would be the appropriate candidate for president. It's a charade.
Transparency.
It's a charade. Yeah. And Jeff Bezos should be congratulated for saying, we're not going to do the charade. If individual writers, columnists, editors want to sound off, let them. Mm-hmm. But frankly, the real problem at the LA Times and the Washington Post is they don't have viewpoint diversity.
That would get exposed.
They talk about diversity. They don't have viewpoint diversity.
Yeah.
And it would be exposed if they all individually had to come out and say who they were for.
Yeah. Last week's big story in the campaign seemed to revolve around the portrayals of Trump as Hitler. Glenn Greenwald.
We're going to continue on that,
yeah,
by the way.
I know you've got some additions to that. Glenn Greenwald is one of the writers and political website creators that pointed this out on his social media handle. He pointed out maybe the Trump is Hitler thing could work if Trump were an unknown. But he's been famous for 5 decades. He's beloved by U.S. elites. He's the star of a hit primetime show. Oprah at one point suggested he run for president. Trump has hung out with rappers and billionaires. The Clintons went to his wedding. And just 3 years ago, he was president for 4 years, and nobody except for MSNBC viewers remembers anything related to death camps, wars of conquest, or other Hitlerian behavior. And it's all been tried before, including the same John Kelly crap. It has the stench of desperation. And then Glenn Greenwald posted a picture. I don't know if you know about this picture. Have you seen the picture of Hillary Clinton smiling at Hitler?
No.
Have you? You haven't seen this picture?
No.
I'll bet you money you have. You just don't know. It's the picture of the Clintons at Donald Trump and Melania's wedding.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
Right?
Okay.
Exactly.
Yes.
And Hillary Clinton has the biggest smile on her face. She's gazing up at Donald Trump. But again, Donald Trump is Hitler.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
It ain't going to work. And by the way, you know their latest Nazi accusation is, don't you?
I missed this, maybe.
Trump held a rally
at MSG
in Madison Square Garden.
And in 1939.
Did you know that in 1939 there was a pro-Nazi rally in that same building at that same place? Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, proof that Trump is a Nazi.
Yep.
Oh, these people are desperate. By the way, it's the same building where John F. Kennedy held a political rally. It's the same building where I believe Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton were nominated for president.
Nixon had like a Halloween bash there a week before the election. I remember.
Oh, my goodness. The stench, not of extremism, but of desperation, is really showing itself in the Kamala Harris camp. Okay, so what is it about the Trump appearance in New York at Madison Square Garden that even before the event had the Democrats just going nuts? I mean, we've got a clip from Tim Walz saying that, Trump has completely lost it. He's going to have a rally at Madison Square Garden, and that is the same place that the Nazis held a rally in 1939, and don't think he doesn't know it. And again, folks, it's Madison Square Garden is like Climate Pledge Arena, okay? It's the biggest venue in town. It's where the New York Knicks play basketball. It's where the Rangers play hockey. It's when the Democrats had their national convention. Back in 1960, they nominated John F. Kennedy. And it's where they nominated Jimmy Carter. And it's where they nominated Bill Clinton. So this is the Nazi, the site of a Nazi rally. This is supposed to be a sign of political extremism that you're holding your rally in the biggest arena in town? Look, here's what really is driving them nuts. Here is what infuriates the political left. They think that's our arena. That's our city you're holding this rally in. That's New York City. That's ours. And Trump makes it clear, no, actually, I think I've got a lot of friends out there. Remember when he had that rally in the Bronx and AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, just lost it? Picture it this way. Suppose Donald Trump announced he was going to do a rally in Washington State at Climate Pledge Arena. You know, in the heart of Seattle World's Fair site. Or if he was holding the rally at one of the stadiums, Lumen Field, where the Hawks allegedly play football, just not well, and where T-Mobile Park, where the Mariners play. There would be this fury about how dare he come to the heart, the bluest part of one of the bluest states in Washington. Now, if you wanted to hold a rally, you know, in Wenatchee or Tri-Cities, fine. But how dare he come to Seattle? This is what is driving them nuts. And the fact that, again, you not only had 20,000 people in the arena, but you had over 50,000. Some people say, if you count the number of cell phones, that it was closer to 80,000 people outside the arena. I guarantee you, Kamala wouldn't get a crowd like that, including the fact that it's in a city where she is going to win the popular vote. She would just have trouble drawing a crowd. And it drives them nuts that Trump, who used to be a New York resident, very much, you know, the most famous man in New York City. And they were okay with that before he started getting overtly political. And then they, as you know, embarked on a strategy to ruin him politically, to ruin him financially, to go after his kids. And it didn't work. And so he moves to Florida, better weather, better tax situation, and quite frankly, nicer people. And then he comes back to New York for this hero's welcome, this massive audience, and it just is driving the Democrats out of their minds. They haven't figured Donald Trump out. Tucker Carlson, known throughout America as the second smartest Carlson in all of news media, was at the rally last night. He spoke, and he said, have the Democrats ever thought maybe they should just take a step back and ask why Trump is popular in the first place?
Donald Trump's going to win. He's going to win. I know that that's true. Why is Donald Trump going to win? The people he's about to defeat have no idea. And they're panicked. They have no idea why people like Donald Trump. And their first theory was, well, Donald Trump is evil, so half the country's evil also. And that's one of the reasons they spent the last 4 years trying to destroy the country, because they're mad at its voters for liking Donald Trump. How much easier would it have been just to pause for 20 minutes and ask yourself honestly in some silent place, why do people like Donald Trump? And if they had been honest enough to ask themselves that question, they would have come up with the two main reasons, and here's what they are. The first reason that people like Donald Trump is because he likes them. That's why. And it's real. Affection is something you can't fake. I don't care how many times Kamala Harris would tell me she loves me, I don't believe her. I saw her kiss her husband with a mask on. A mask on. That's her version of love. It's fake. It's not real. They spent 10 years telling you Trump is a hater. Do you feel that on him? No, you don't. Because it's not there. I've spent a lot of time with Trump. And there's not one moment I've ever been with him off camera where he's spending his time grousing about people he hates. Ever. He's talking about the people and the country he loves in his private time. Trust me. And people know, in a country that has been taken over by a leadership class that actually despises them and their values and their history and their culture and their customs, really hates them to the point that it's trying to replace them, they know someone who actually has affection for them, and that's Donald Trump. And it's requited. It's requited. They know. When he goes to McDonald's and serves fries, like, he's not faking that at all. That's why that worked. Democratic media consultants are like, how is that working? Because it's real. That's why. And the second reason that people love Trump, and I put myself in this category, it's why I'm here today, is because he's liberated us in the deepest and truest sense. And the liberation he has brought to us is the liberation from the obligation to tell lies. Donald Trump has made it possible for the rest of us to tell the truth about the world around us. And that's the single most liberating thing you can do for people. If you want to enslave people, if you want to degrade them, force them to tell lies. And they have. They force us to lie about everything, at gunpoint, effectively. They put people in prison for refusing to lie. And not just the obvious lies that men can become women or Vladimir Putin blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. No, honestly, he did. January 6th was an insurrection. They were unarmed, but it was very insurrection-y. Not even the obvious ones, but the big lie. You know what the big lie is? The big lie is that they're impressive. That's what the big lie is. That the people in charge have somehow earned the right to rule over you, and they haven't. And you know that. These are the single most useless people in the United States. They have no skills whatsoever.
But enough about Karine Jean-Pierre. You know, enough about Kamala Harris. Enough about Tim Walz. First of all, Tucker can be very controversial. And he says some stuff that I don't agree with. But man, is he right on point about both of these things. Think of how casually and routinely people lie on college campuses. The whole DEI ideology that banks on America being a systemically racist and awful nation, that is a lie. That America was founded for the purpose, this is 1619 garbage, for the purpose of perpetuating slavery. The whole thing about the whole trans issue, the whole nonsense about climate change, the big story about climate change is how divorced it has become from science. It's now an ideology bordering on religious fervor. Do you really think anything Jay Inslee says is anchored to science? Just their entire, you know, mode of their agenda on, oh, the reason we have a homeless problem is because we don't spend enough money on it. Oh, really? That's it? Oh, thank you. Well, we'll double what we're spending and then we'll have no more homeless, right? We did double, we tripled, we quadrupled what we spent on homeless. We got more of it. So his point is a very good one. And I'll bring up the first point that he made is, I think, even more provocative, which is that Donald Trump really does like the American people. He really does like them. They're not an obstacle he's got to get around in order to get power. They're the reason he wants power. Got our good buddy Lars Larson, our noon to three host, with us. How you doing, Lars?
I'm doing well. 8 days out from the election, I'm pretty excited. I think we're going the right direction, although I'm a little concerned about the initiatives in Washington State because, you know, when you have people saying, well, maybe I'll vote no. No. Washington State, vote yes on all of them. State of Oregon, vote no on all of them. You'll get the right result.
I think you are right. We are going to have Brian Haywood on the show at 8:35 to talk about how things are going with the initiative. So
good. Very
good little tease that you inadvertently helped me with there.
Well, would you ask him, does he have plans to do more? Because I think there are other major issues. I don't want to put minor issues on initiatives, but I think there are some other major issues we could easily vote on.
Yes. Oh, I do too. That's how you basically keep one party rule honest, is that you let them know the people have the final word. I got to ask you about this lawsuit against Portland Public Schools.
Yeah.
Lynette Colley filed the lawsuit on behalf of her daughter, Dania, who was in her first year at Roosevelt High in Portland when a senior girl kicked her and hit her and grabbed her and slapped her more than 80 times while school staff
stood. Daylights out of her, and there were adult staff members who stood by, and you can see it in the video. And they simply stood by and let it happen. Finally, at the end of the beating, one staff member stepped in and pulled the assailant off. There appeared to have been, by the way, the first question that would occur to me, too, is, was there a provocation? Apparently, completely unprovoked. But then when the mother went to the school and said, did you offer medical help, any assistance? Nope. Her mom took her to urgent care. She is apparently going to be okay, but may have problems because she apparently suffered a concussion. It was that serious a beating. And the mother said, are you going to supply the videos from the closed-circuit cameras in the school to the police? And the school's attitude was the police can subpoena them and try to obtain them. In other words,
they're covering for the attacker.
Yeah, and here's the thing, I'll remind you again, every state has mandatory reporting laws. If you believe a child is being abused, now, classically, that's, are they being abused by the parents or whatever? You have video of a school and a beating of a young lady, that's abuse, and you don't report it, somebody needs to be punished, charged criminally.
How was the girl punished?
The other? Not at all, as near as we can tell.
The girl who attacked that other girl, the senior who attacked the freshman because she didn't like her expression when she walked by?
Yep.
No punishment after beating her for a minute? Wow.
And the beatings will continue.
Unbelievable. You don't want to miss Lars, noon to three, hour number two of The Commute, right around the corner.
There is too much on the line, and we must not wake up the day after the election and have any regrets about what we could have done in these next 9 days.
I will end inflation. I will stop the invasion of criminals coming into our country, and I will bring back the American dream.
Yes, I believe more people believe him than believe her. I believe more people think that things will get better because they were better when he was there than they are now. And she has made a most unconvincing case that things will get better if she's around, if she's calling the shots, okay? If she's calling the shots. Welcome, everybody, to the John Carlson Show, hour number two, the radio program of record. We're going to... Yes, we still have a lot to talk about regarding the presidential race. However, we got some great local stuff coming your way as well. As I mentioned a moment ago, Brian Haywood going to be stepping aboard, joining us at 8:35, talking about the status of the initiative campaigns. Remember, all four, vote yes. Vote yes, you pay less. You'll be freer. You'll be happier. And Jay Inslee will be much more sad, which is a good thing, when these initiatives all pass. And we'll, again, get into the details of that coming at 8:35. At 7:35, Todd Meyer's joining us. Couple of reasons. First of all, did you know that Washington State, which is endlessly touting how we are the place where clean jobs, clean green jobs are being created, that we're not the leading state at all? We're not even in the top five. We're not even in the top 10. We're not even in the top 20. When it comes to the creation of clean jobs, we're not in the top half. Todd Myers tells us where we really rank and why. And then the Seattle Times really did have an impressive story. Great front page story about how these court-ordered salmon culverts are getting increasingly expensive for increasingly little return, so much so that tribal leaders who filed the suit resulting in the court order are shaking their heads saying, no, 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 this is not how we save salmon. And as environmental director of the Policy Center, who's shown quite a strong interest in protecting salmon, we'll be asking Todd about that as well. By the way, did you guys get caught up in that traffic jam?
I have something to
thankfully,
share.
Thankfully, no. This is the 45-car crash you're talking 45 about?
45-car crash?
So explain, share, and then I'll tell you
I was just wrapping up your news shift yesterday.
What happened.
Okay, well, shortly before 2 in the afternoon, the State Department of Transportation said all lanes on I-5 just south of Highway 516 were blocked. And as tow trucks arrived on the scene, the backup went for 5 miles.
Okay, so working yesterday, my weekend shift in Northwest News, we kept saying, and Stella Sun knew at the Tacoma Weather Center, said we got some storms coming in here, watch for the heavy rain at times or whatever. Last minute, Karen's working a project in Olympia, so I had to drive from Seattle to Olympia. I rolled through that area at about 1 o'clock, and most of you know that's the Kent-Des Moines turnoff all the way down to South 272nd Street. This is where we have the legendary ghost lanes.
And there is a construction, this is a construction area for the light rail system.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, the ghost lanes are, we have lines to tell you what lanes to be in, but we have, like, I call them shadows of where the lines used to be. If the light gets bright, if you get rainstorms and you're not used to the area, you have to pay attention. You really got to watch the road. Just 2 or 3 feet off and you'll be out of your lane.
Well, and it's dark and getting dark and, right. And reflections.
Yeah, the water's coming up off all the other car tires.
So this is at 2 o'clock. As I'm rolling after Kent-Des Moines turnoff, I'm noticing a lot of speeding cars. You know, you get one or two that do the Daytona 500. I was seeing groups of 4 and 5 cars, and I'm like, wait a minute, the Seahawks game is going on. Why do we have so many people speeding on the freeway? I moved to the right lane to be safe because I'm approaching the ghost lanes. I had 2 semi-trucks move and get behind me, and I thought, okay, they know what's going on. We stayed there, and John, I saw 2 cars actually leave their lane. Luckily, there was nobody on either side, and they were speeding. And I said to myself, if there's not a major accident in this area, by the end of this day, I'll be totally shocked. I get to Olympia. All of a sudden, Karen says, did you hear what just happened up? We've got 30 cars.
1 hour after you passed.
I'm telling you, it's the worst. And if you're not used to it, and everybody who commutes that afternoon, you know what I'm talking about. Those ghost lanes have been a nightmare for years. And again, it's just, they're not bright enough. They're white. If you're new, you get rain, you get sunshine. It's hard to tell where you're supposed to be in what lane.
Why don't they put the tortoise shells?
Good question.
Well, I think it's part of the construction, ongoing stuff. But I've noticed that same problem where you had the reflective strips that got peeled off.
Right.
And they leave these either grooves or a kind of a visual trail. And then when they restripe, like you were talking about in the updated work zone, it all of a sudden, if you aren't paying attention, you'd be looking at one thing and going, oh, my gosh, this isn't the lane.
Speeding car in the rain. You get one look at your radio to dial. You look at your cell phone. Shame on you. You're going to be out of your lane in no time. You get cars crashing. Now you got fuel. You got oil. That added to it. You said 45 cars. At one time, there were 40 tow trucks on that scene. Unbelievable.
40 tow trucks. This was yesterday afternoon, I found.
And, you know, we hear about these big car pileup crashes in other parts of the country. Because we don't necessarily get weather like they do in other parts of the country,
and it's
either
usually
fog
set off by
or
fog
ice or something.
Or snow, heavy snow.
Yeah, boom. And I grew up in Tacoma, born and raised here. I've never heard about a crash of this magnitude until yesterday.
Rule one, you get a lot of rain here, do not use your cruise control, people.
State Patrol says the reason for it is, yes, the roads were wet, and yes, there was high winds and heavy showers. But they blame speed. There were
I'm sure it's too many people going
too fast in those conditions. 45, unbelievably, no serious injuries. Wow.
That kind of goes back to the safety level of cars these days.
Yeah, insurance people, get ready for a busy day.
That's right. It is 7:11 on the John Carlson Show. All right. I wanted to play this clip because, as you have heard, Donald Trump under fire for supposedly being a closet sympathizer of the Nazis, that he is a fascist. By the way, this is what a campaign says about the opposition when, first of all, their own cupboard is a little bare in terms of having ideas to make life better or a convincing case to make. So then it's, well, we just got to demonize the opponent. And if you're throwing around the F word, fascist, or the N word, Nazi, it usually means you're running out of gas. It usually means you're desperate. It would be like if Donald Trump was going around the country calling Kamala Harris a communist. Okay, is she far left, hard left? Yes. Is she a communist, a Stalinist? No. Silly. And maybe they just don't understand how they're coming across, but that is what they are saying about Trump. That is what Karine Jean-Pierre said about Trump. Here is what Tim Walz said about the rally last night at Madison Square Garden.
Donald Trump has descended into madness over the last few weeks. And I think some of you don't miss on this. Go do your Google on this. Donald Trump's got this big rally going at Madison Square Garden. There's a direct parallel to a big rally that happened in the mid-1930s at Madison Square Garden. And don't think that he doesn't know for one second exactly what they're doing there.
What's the direct parallel? That they held the rally in the same address? 65 years apart? Where over 10,000 other events have been held? Including three Democratic nominees for president? Really? That's your parallel? As I told you last hour, what drives them nuts is that Trump held his rally right in the heart of liberal Americana, the biggest arena in downtown New York City. Drives them nuts. But how is this working? How is this theme working? I mean, you know, is it maybe getting some traction with people? Is it maybe raising the fear level about Donald Trump? Well, CNN, or Mark Halperin, longtime political commentator and pundit, held a online focus group with eight undecided Democratic voters in Pennsylvania, which again is a must-win state for the Democrats, and a it would really be nice win for Republicans. And he asked that he pose the question to them. Here was their response.
In the last few days, the vice president has started to talk about Donald Trump as a fascist, as someone who's spoken approvingly of Hitler. Raise your hand if you've heard about those comments. Okay.
All but one. So seven of the eight had heard those comments.
What do folks think? Is that something that's persuasive to you? Is that something that you'll factor into your vote? Linda.
To me, it's horrible that she's saying that about him. If he was saying that about her, everybody would be up in arms. I just don't think that's right to come in.
Thank you, sorry, Linda. What other folks think about what the vice president's saying, based on accounts of people who've worked with the President Trump? What do folks think about her making those charges and those characterizations?
She obviously thinks it's going to help her. I don't think it does at all. I don't know why, if it was Kelly who heard the president say that. I'm not saying he did or he didn't. I don't think he'd lie. I think you said that, Mark, on an episode. But I think that he had a responsibility to resign.
He's referring to General John Kelly, who was his former general, who was his chief of staff, and who said that Trump made statements like, I need more generals like Hitler had, or something like that. If he really did feel, if he really felt that Trump was approving of what Nazis were all about, the Nazi agenda, the Nazi program, the Nazi final solution, if he really believed that Trump was admiring Nazis for being Nazi, then why didn't he resign? Boy, that's a good question. Why didn't General Kelly resign? And by the way, he hasn't been able to find, there has been absolutely no one backing him up on making that statement. And several people who claim to have been in the room where Kelly said Trump said that, said Trump didn't say that. So anyway, let's continue.
The day that was said, if that's true, I don't think that's the case.
Okay. What do other folks think?
I can't. I think part of the reason why I'm being pushed towards Trump so strongly is that I find that the Democrats and the left just keep going straight to Hitler all of the time with everything. Like it, and if it's not the left pushing Hitler, it's the right pushing Stalin. So it's like we're fighting World War II every single day for every single election. So it's so exhausting. I think it just detracts from, it pushes me away from their position, and it, you know, it's so hyperbolic that it makes it impossible to have good discussions. And I think it ruins the discourse.
Does anybody think it's valuable or something you want to hear from the vice president? Anybody raise your hand if you think this is something that's important for her to be talking about.
No hands.
Anybody? Okay.
No hands. No hands went up. And by the way, if Donald Trump did start barnstorming the country with, you know, arranging a narrative, meaning he would say it and then other people around him would say it and members of Congress would say it and then Fox News would say it and then other conservative media would say it, that Kamala Harris was a communist, I'd be attacking that too. I said, number one, it's not true. Number two, politically, it's stupid to say it. But these people around Trump are around Kamala Harris, when they look at Trump, they are so unhinged and they are now so fearful that they're not going to be able to pull this off, meaning remaking an image around Kamala that it ain't working, ain't selling with the voters anymore. that they actually believe this. Because people they talk to at dinner parties think that Trump's a fascist. That people that they talk to at work, they believe that Trump's going to round up people. So I guess he is. Again, it goes to show, I've been saying this for quite some time, most Americans, regardless of political party, regardless of race, regardless of income, most Americans, everyday ordinary Americans, are pretty level-headed. It's our elites who have lost their minds. It's our elites who are extreme and overly ideological. It's our elites who are neurotic. And I think this is just the latest manifestation of that. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, right around the corner with a social media sweep. It's 7:20. Good morning.
For our listeners, in hopes they find a good price on gas this morning on the way to work.
Running on empty, this might be the Kamala Harris campaign theme.
Oh.
All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what's going on in the social media world right now?
Something happened on the Sunday night football game last night.
I know where you're going here.
Oh, man. You know, and if people who want to continually debate everything political, if they had a slightly longer memory, I think it would really create a healthier political climate here in the United States of America. Let me tell you why. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Last night, it was the Dallas Cowboys, San Francisco 49ers, NBC, Sunday Night Football. Post-game, on-field report.
Forgot to tell us who won.
Yeah, the winning quarterback, San Francisco's Brock Purdy, is being interviewed by the sideline reporter. Pretty obligatory stuff.
Yeah.
Happens at the end of every ball game. And up comes one of the other San Francisco players, a guy named, I think it's Joey Bosa. He has a brother named Nick Bosa. Nope, it was Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa is a defensive player for the 49ers. He comes walking up behind the sideline reporter and the quarterback, and he's got this cap on, and it says, "Make America Great Again." And he leans in over the microphone and tips his head down so you can see that the hat says, "Make America Great Again." And people are losing their minds.
Oh, you're kidding.
That this guy did this because of the quote-unquote implications of supporting Trump. So I'm looking at one post. It says, and this is just a football-related, your home for everything football, credentialed media, 287,000 social media followers. It says, "Will be very interesting to see if Nick Bosa receives any sort of fine or punishment from the NFL or the 49ers.
Oh, he'll be fine.
For publicly displaying support for a political party while in uniform. This is pretty much unprecedented."
Oh.
That's what they write. That's
I guess he should have taken a knee for the national anthem.
And
instead.
There you go. And all the people that are freaking out about this completely forgot about the fall of 2020 when you had players taking a knee. And things like that after the death and the murder of George Floyd. And that's what's been completely overlooked here. So it always works one direction with the political support, and it never works the other direction. So, and as somebody pointed out, are you where people knelt for the national anthem? And somebody else pointed out, you know, the phrase "Make America Great Again" is a phrase. It gives no mention or specific mention of any candidate. Most of all, most of us know what it infers. But that is one of the things that's happening after this Sunday night football game last night on NBC. Here locally, King
well,
5.
But again, you know, it's just a sign of how unhinged the other side is. Because if someone had run up with a Kamala hat, you know,
like
I would have just kind of rolled my eyes.
The Harris Walls camo hat.
Yeah, I would have just kind of rolled my eyes. Yeah. But, you know, Nick Bosa does this with the Make America Great Again hat, and all of a sudden it's, how dare he?
Yeah, he must be fined. He must be punished for this display. King 5 is posting about the four statewide initiatives on our November ballot, saying statewide initiatives saw a big shift in support. What happened? And it goes through with the four initiatives that are on the statewide ballot back in July, or I think, yeah, survey of voters in July showed approval of the four statewide initiatives. Meanwhile, more recent ones are not receiving as much voter support. And they talked to a political science professor at University of Washington named James Long, who points out, look at all the advertising on the no side. So all of that Steve Ballmer, Bill Gates money that's going into the no campaign seems to be impacting public support. And I think I brought this up a week or so ago. When we get to a couple of days after the election, if some of these statewide initiatives don't pass and people realize, oh, I voted no, and I guess I didn't realize what that meant, and I'm going to be stuck with higher grocery prices because of the carbon fuel taxes that affect everything that has to get trucked or transported to a store. I'm going to have to pay more at the pump. I'm going to have more money taken out of my paycheck because we decided we didn't want to opt in to this bogus long-term care tax that Governor Inslee is saddling us with, that those sorts of things are going to happen because I get this. The thing that really bothers me is we've had a couple of other polls that have come out in the last week that are saying cost of living is the worst part of being in Washington right now.
Yeah.
It's too expensive here. And yet the easiest way to fix that would be via these initiatives. Vote yes, pay less. But then the scare tactics come out on these, really bogus no campaign ads. And it's confusing the voters.
Here's the bottom line. Okay, the bottom line is this, that they're trying to drown out debate. They're not trying to foster debate and conversation discussion. Yeah. They're trying to drown it out and with a massive tidal wave of money here. Yeah. And the media, regrettably, are playing along for the most part. And so is this imperiling the initiatives? Well, we're in 1 hour's time, we'll be talking to Brian Haywood about exactly that. Is it time to get concerned about the status of these initiatives? Because in terms of the issues, the people are for them 100%. But will they actually make the connection between the issue and the initiative? We'll talk to Brian Haywood about that again in about 1 hour. You're listening to the John Carlson Show. Go for it. We have a lot more coming your way, including if this election is so close, why is one campaign panicking and the other appears to just be humming along? All right, 23 minutes now to 8 o'clock in the morning in the John Carlson Show. Let's bring it home local. I had a wonderful time on Friday at the Washington Policy Center annual dinner. My goodness sakes, are you ready for this? A conservative free market think tank holds a dinner, political dinner, at a time when people are at all sorts of other events. Over 1,000 people in attendance, and one of the people who spoke was Todd Myers, who we've had on the show many times. He's good for ratings, you know. And I asked him if he would join us this morning. A couple of things I wanted to talk to him about. The first is that Jay Inslee has endlessly touted how Washington is a leader in bringing clean jobs, creating clean jobs, clean green jobs in Washington state. And Todd Myers made note of that and went ahead and did the research, did the math, and calculated that, no, we're not among the nation's leaders. No, we're not even in the top 10. We're not in the top 20. We're not in the top half. Todd Myers, where does Washington state rank in the creation of clean green jobs?
Well, according to the U.S. Department of Energy, which is, of course, the Biden administration, we rank 31st in the country. And this is actually on a web page that the U.S. Department of Energy created to brag about all of the green jobs that have been created by the IRA, the big spending package on various, green and renewable energy projects around the country. And Governor Inslee always talks about, what a great job we're doing. But if you look at, where we're compared to other folks, it's not merely that we're 31st, in the country. It is that other states are so far ahead of us in terms of total jobs, that the amount of jobs we've created is really pretty tiny.
Okay, I'll bite. If not us, then who? Who's leading the pack in the creation of clean energy jobs?
Well, this won't be surprising to your listeners. It will be surprising to some folks, but not your listeners, which is that the jobs are going where there is a friendly business climate. So the number one state in the nation for clean energy jobs is Georgia. And then you go Michigan, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. So the states are not necessarily associated with, left-wing green subsidies and things like that are where the jobs are going. Now, like I said, it's even worse than that because the amount of jobs that we have is very small. So there's a group campaigning to keep the CO2 tax against Initiative 2117 called the Clean and Prosperous Institute. And they sent out something last week about how, Washington was crazy for green jobs. And they even said that we're going, quote, bonkers for batteries. So according to the U.S. Department of Energy, there are about 515 new jobs in Washington state in battery construction. By way of comparison, in Georgia, there's 9,802 jobs battery construction. So we have 515 and they have 9,802. South Carolina has 7,300. So, we are just absolutely far behind all these other states because it's not about, more taxes and more regulation. That's not what creates clean energy jobs. What creates those jobs and those industries is having a friendly business environment, and we don't.
What an eye-opener. So it's not all of these subsidies that creates green jobs. It's simply having a great economic climate, low tax, low regulation, pro-free enterprise, pro-competition environment.
That's right. And then there's another group called the Clean Investment Monitor, which is run by MIT and was actually cited by Bill Gates. Bill Gates is a big advocate of these clean jobs. And so they, in their little newsletter, Cypher, put out the report from the Clean Investment Monitor. And guess what? You find the exact same thing. And then in some categories, they count things slightly differently than the U.S. Department of Energy, but they confirm the U.S. Department of Energy's results. And so, for instance, the Clean Investment Monitor looks at investment in Washington state, or actually in every state, over the last four quarters. They found that Washington has about $100 million in investment. Idaho, though, has $1 billion. So again, whoa. Idaho doesn't have these sorts of rules and regulations and doesn't have, the governor isn't, pushing these industries and touting them. And yet, they are doing much better than Washington state.
That is an eye opener. That's interesting. That's relevant. That is meaningful. And wow, Idaho has 10 times as much money invested in green jobs, Todd. I want to make sure I get this right.
Yeah, energy and industry investment announcements in the last four quarters. So Washington has had about $100 million. Idaho has had over $1 billion.
Wow. It is 7:43. Todd, before I let you go, I've got to ask you about this massive, exhaustive front page story in the Seattle Times about how the salmon recovery requirement, court order, that all of these culverts to make navigation easier for the salmon has resulted in just eye-popping, bizarre, almost surreal projects, like a proposal to tear down a recently remodeled functioning hotel in Port Angeles and excavate the highway salmon culvert that's under it, which would cost, just for this one project, $100 million. Did you see the story?
I have seen lots of, I've seen that project mentioned. I have seen lots of other similar projects. What we are getting to is the point where there was a lot of culverts that were easy to fix, that made sense, that were a reasonable cost. And now we're getting, we're starting to get to the number of culverts that are extremely expensive. What I think and what I hope is that the tribes, who are the ones who got the court order, sit down with the state and say, look, we don't want $100 million spent on something like this. We want to focus the money and the resources where they make sense. Just by way of understanding, $100 million is 4 years of funding for the Salmon Recovery Funding Board, which is one of the main grant programs for salmon recovery. So I hope that, I hope we are reaching a moment where people sit down and say, okay, this has done good. This is, you know, this court order, these projects have done a good job. We now we have to start thinking about whether they make sense. And projects like the one you're talking about is, you know, sort of exhibit A in that process.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, Ron Allen, who's the chairman of the Jamestown, I believe it's Sklallam.
Yep.
And his, their traditional territory includes Port Angeles, where this culvert would go under this hotel, which they would demolish, by the way. He said, quote, while we were fixing mistakes of the past, you do it in a more surgical way. You don't do it with a bulldozer approach. You don't use a meat cleaver. He says that there is a need for a flexible and creative approach to realize that we're trying to benefit salmon here. Quote, my view is work out an agreement with the state and the court, step back and reprioritize, figure out which ones are the ones that are most important right now and zero in on that.
And that right there is why Ron Allen is one of the most respected tribal leaders on salmon and other issues. The Jamestown Sklallam are really, they do remarkable things. In fact, they shut down fishing on their own reservation because they wanted it to recover. And they set up a project of raising black cod to supplement the tribe's income. And unfortunately, Hillary Franz, who is Commissioner of Public Lands, shut down all of the net pens, even the ones that NOAA Fisheries is working with, and one of those was the Jamestown Sklallam. It's really unfortunate. The Jamestown Sklallam tribe has done a lot to walk their talk and do salmon recovery, and I think that Chairman Allen's comments there are just emblematic of that. So I think, you know, people can get frustrated by a lot of this stuff, but I think that there are a lot of reasonable, smart voices out there on this issue, and I think he's one of them, so I'm really glad to hear that.
Are you optimistic or pessimistic? Something's going to happen. We've got 27 seconds here.
It's the problem with politics and environmental policy is that people often are afraid to give up what they have, even if what the alternative is better. And so we need to get, you know, environmental policy out of the hands of politicians. But I will say that with comments like that, that make me optimistic that we can get something done.
Boy, I hope so. Anyway, check out that article because you just shake your head and say, you know, there's no concept of value. What are we getting for what we're spending? No concept of value in this project whatsoever. All right, it is 48 minutes after 7 o'clock. Thank you very much, Todd Myers. You're listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning.
Original bassist, original founding member, yes. Phil Lesh, passed away as we started the weekend at the age of 84. This is when he co-wrote.
All right, a little Grateful Dead action at 7:53, 7 to 8 on the commute with Carlson. So here's the question. We keep hearing that this is a really close race, that it could go either way, that it's within a it appears that Kamala is a little bit ahead of Donald Trump, but who knows what's going to happen. But one of the campaigns seems to be in borderline panic, and the other is coasting along. What's going on? Well, here's Steve Kornacki from NBC, their polling guru, about why you're seeing such different reactions from the campaigns about this relatively close race.
One thing we have noticed in the last couple of days, this is not all of the polls that are out there now, but we have seen a number, four in the last 4 days, that have shown very small, but in the context of this close race, potentially meaningful movement in Trump's direction. I don't want to overstate it, but at the same time, it's hard to ignore these four. The CNBC poll came out the other day, has Trump ahead by 2. The Wall Street Journal poll, Trump ahead by 3. These are national numbers. Siena and the New York Times, a tied race. CNN, a tied race. The significance here is broader movement. Again, we're seeing in Trump's direction. To put this in some context, here is our current national polling average. Let me call that up on the screen for you right here. Harris continues to lead nationally. I want to stress that, but we've been tracking this every week on the air here. A couple weeks ago, this number was at 3 for Kamala Harris. Her lead in the poll average now down to 1.2 because of some of the numbers that I just showed you. Of course, the swing states, the battleground states, are going to be what decide this election, and look how close those are. We see 1.2 nationally. Just about all these swing states are even tighter than that. So Trump, certainly a little improvement nationally, but where the race is decided, absolutely razor thin. But what is happening nationally? Well, we can show you from the CNBC poll. They picked up on something that our own NBC poll was suggesting recently, and that is a shift in the image of Kamala Harris. You can see right now in the CNBC poll, 42 positive, 48 negative. Higher negative than positive. That's where Trump is, too, largely, 39-49. The significance is about a month ago when we were polling this, Harris had a higher positive than negative. In our poll, in the CNBC poll, in other polls out there right now, you see Harris now with that negative going back above that positive rating.
Okay. That's why Team Kamala is panicking. You look at the battleground states, Donald Trump is winning all of the battleground states. Remember, the Democrats have to win Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Trump's winning all of them. Again, it's very close, but keep in mind also, the trend had been going in Kamala's direction. Now it's going away from her. And Trump's not only in front of her in those races, he's also in front of her in the other swing states, like Georgia, like Arizona, like Nevada. That's why Team Kamala Harris is panicking. 3 minutes after 8 o'clock. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome back, everybody. Hour number 3 of the commute underway. And if you have comments you want to broadcast to the listening masses, or if you simply want to text in your comments and I'll repeat them, I'm happy to do so. The number is the same for both. 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. Here's some of those text messages right now. We are going to be talking at 8:35 with Brian Haywood about the massive onslaught of money encouraging people to vote no on the four initiatives that are on the ballot, courtesy of Let's Go Washington. Is he worried? Eric in Puyallup says, John, I'm a mail carrier, and I've seen more no campaign mailers on the initiatives than yes. They are pushing hard for the no vote. And, of course, they're not only doing that in the mailbox. If you are watching TV, I'm going to guess that the ads encouraging you to vote no outnumber the ones encouraging you to vote yes by at least 4-1, maybe closer to 6-1.
Yeah, I'll watch different streaming shows and things like that. And it's not like these shows are new. Some of these shows are several years old, for instance. And on a couple of platforms, we pay the lower subscription rate, and you get stuck with watching some ads between the show segments and things like that. And pretty much every ad that I'm seeing on these streaming platforms comes off as a no ad, or it's a pro Kim Schreier ad, or it's a anti-Reichert ad, that sort of stuff.
Here's Chris in Puyallup echoing what Eric, also from Puyallup, says. Says, where's the advertising for yes on these four initiatives? All I've seen on TV are no advertisements. Why do all that work to get the signatures if there's no advertising to vote yes? I've also gotten at least three mailers for no, but I haven't received one for yes. Justin from Maple Valley said, why is calling Kamala Harris a radical far-left socialist okay, but a communist is over the line? Laugh out loud. Well, two responses here to Justin. First of all, I haven't called her a radical far-left socialist. I have said that she has a more liberal voting record than Bernie Sanders, who calls himself a socialist, because she did. That is a matter of record. And so it's legitimate to call her a radical member of the Senate when she has a more radical voting record than Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. Secondly, why would it be not over the line to call her radical or far left, but it would be to call her a communist? That's a good question, actually. And the answer is, a communist suggests you're a member of an insidious movement. Maybe you're not only in sync with some of the things that communists believe, but you're now actually part of them. You're part of essentially a political party. You're part of an ideological movement. And so I have no problem calling someone like Shama Sawant a communist. I think she is. But I would not call Kamala Harris a communist for that very reason. Here is someone else who's anti-Trump. Kevin from Seattle. Said, John, when did you become okay with hate speech as a tenet of your party and your presidential candidate? More Christian values, John, or is just this pre-Vatican II Catholicism that you'd like to see us return to? The Catholicism that hates Jews and supported Nazism. Okay, first of all, Kevin needs a history lesson. The Catholic Church was not in support of Nazism. Catholic priests were killed by the Nazis. Secondly, the Pope saved, Pope Pius at that time, saved many Jews and was lauded by Jewish leaders for doing so. So that was a libel that the Catholic Church in the 30s and 40s was in any way supportive of Nazism. They were not. Secondly, Donald Trump makes bombastic statements and cringeworthy statements sometimes, but his campaign is not a campaign of hate. It is a campaign that says we're going to replace success with failure. He is not calling Joe Biden evil. Calls him Crooked Joe. Because he kind of is. But he's also beyond the pale at this point. And he doesn't call Kamala Harris evil, but he calls her inept. He calls her an amateur. He calls her extreme. She's all three of those things. And he says, you know, she should be fired. What they're doing to Trump is different. They're not just calling Trump extreme or that he'd be a horrible president. They're saying he would be dangerous. First, it was that he's a threat to democracy.
I was just going to say the threat part.
Yeah. Threat to democracy. Threat. Now they're saying he's an out-and-out fascist. Now they're saying he's going to round people up. And these aren't just crazy people talking. These are people who know better. And they are deliberately creating this menacing image around Donald Trump. I believe to frighten voters, even if it also ramps up the chance that there would be yet another assassination attempt on Donald Trump. Because, frankly, there are some people out there, I don't think they would mind if there was. Okay, Mike Snoqualmie says, hey, John, maybe New York City should just tear down Madison Square Garden since it's such a Nazi symbol.
Well, that would solve the Democrats' problem, right?
By the way, radio legend Mark Christopher points out that the old Madison Square Garden where they held that rally in the 30s, that was torn down and then replaced.
Well, Bob Blackburn, legendary Sonics announcer, I was fortunate to get to work with him. And we talked about it and the Sonics, you know, when they came here. First game for the Sonics was actually this past 2 weeks.
1967.
Okay. At the Coliseum, of course, built for the World's Fair in 62. So that's 67. The Madison Square Garden, as we know it, with that name, officially started in February of 1968. And Bob's always had an argument with the National, you know, Basketball Association here.
Well, the previous arena was also called Madison Square Garden.
Where? In New York.
New York City. Well, but they rebuilt it.
Right. And they always said it's the oldest NBA venue of the NBA. And Blackburn saying, no. We had it first here in Seattle in October 67 at the Coliseum. But anyway, so 68 was, they claimed that was the official Madison Square Garden at the location we know it today. So it was not there in 1939. There was another building maybe there, because you said that, the location. Yeah,
Madison Square Garden itself was, I think, a block away, something like that. Then they rebuilt it and called it the same thing.
Do we call this a fact check?
Yes. Good to have the radio legend here to fact check the Democrats on that. Very good. And we have another, you know, very frustrated listener, voter says, John, I'm wondering, do you know if Dave Reichert's ever going to respond to this endless barrage of lies in Bob Ferguson's ads and about him voting constantly for abortion bans? This is very frustrating. So, this is something I'm hearing from a lot of people. A lot of people very, very discouraged about this. And I have seen a couple of ads from Dave Reichert, but let's just say this. Right now, in an environment where people care a lot about crime and drugs and homelessness, Bob Ferguson should be the one on defense, explaining why he wanted to remove all criminal penalties for fentanyl use and fentanyl possession. He wanted to remove all criminal penalties for crystal meth, for heroin, for fentanyl. And he not only was public about it, he was public and vocal about it, and even boasted that he was the first politician in Washington State to call for this. He thought this was going to be the future. And of course, Oregon actually did go in that direction, and it completely blew up in their face. And this is what happens when one side has, what is it, at least a 3-to-1, 4-to-1 financial advantage and have just been putting their money into endless TV ads that ceaselessly attacked Dave Reichert on two things, abortion and Trump, abortion and Trump, abortion and Trump. That's all they focus on. And now they've got Dave being defensive instead of the guy who should be defensive. So not much time left to reverse that momentum. All right, back to national picture, which appears much more optimistic. Very interesting how the Democrats are trying to make trying to make inroads with male voters. And Megyn Kelly, who's conservative. You're going to hear Megyn Kelly, then you're going to hear from Michelle Obama. But let me... We have the Megyn Kelly. Do we not have the Michelle Obama? Oh, okay. We have Megyn Kelly. Hold on. Here we go.
The reason I think Trump's numbers are going up so high with men, because there are a lot of men who are pro-choice too, is just what we've done to men for the past 15 plus years in this country. I just think that men, and it, you know, this isn't racial. It's white, black, Hispanic. Men are sick and tired. It's not just of being kicked around. Men can take being kicked around. Of being told you're nothing. It's more than that. It's worse than that you're evil. It's that you're nothing. You can't have a job. You are no longer in the running in the American race to improve your life. You're out.
I think that growing numbers of men have that feeling because among our elites, it is more and more clear. It's part of DEI ideology.
Well, she didn't
It's part of what intersectionality is all about, which is where do you stand on the oppression scale? And it's all defined by race, gender, and sexual orientation.
She didn't say the words toxic masculinity, but when I heard that clip, I thought she must be talking about toxic masculinity, the way that got thrown around by people on the progressive Democratic side of the political ledger. This looks like it's turned into this advantage for Trump now with male voters because
Like,
why, you know, why would I pitch my support towards Kamala Harris when as a guy, I more or less get portrayed as being bad or hostile or toxic.
So Michelle Obama spoke over the weekend about the male vote going heavily to Trump because they always they love gender gaps when it's a woman gender gap that helps Democrats. They celebrate that. And there is a gender gap about 14 points for Kamala Harris. But there's also a gender gap among men for Trump. And it's larger than the gender gap among women for Kamala Harris. It's a 16-point gap. We've never seen this before. The genders are apart by 30 points on who they want for president, and it is slightly favoring the Republican right now. And so over the weekend, Michelle Obama actually said, when she was speaking, said, men need to do better by their women. She was talking about how men should vote. Men need to do better by their women and prove it with their vote. Can you imagine if a male politician had said, women need to do better by their men and start voting Republican? Oh, man. But again, it doesn't even occur to her how this sounds to people. One more example of how the other side just keeps getting this so wrong. The latest ad, which I thought this was a political dirty trick when I heard this, Phil. I thought it was a political dirty trick. It is an ad showing a young man watching porn in bed, and underneath the sheets, he is, let's just say, self-pleasuring while he's looking at porn.
Simulating that, yeah.
On his smartphone.
Keep it classy, San Diego.
Yeah, and then a middle-aged, stern-looking white male in a three-piece suit walks into his bedroom and grabs his smartphone. The guy says, "Hey, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm your Republican congressman. We're in charge now, and you shouldn't be doing this."
And let me guess, this is an ad for a Democrat.
And this is an ad for why you should why young white guys should vote for Democrats, because Republican congressmen will keep you from pleasuring yourself while you're watching porn.
Online content.
I thought this was a political dirty trick. It's not. Two progressive interest groups spent $2 million to make and place this ad throughout the country, mostly on social media sites. That is how they think. That is how progressives think you get out the vote for Kamala. By saying Republicans are going to keep you from watching porn and following through on your smartphone. Wow. Let's just say the Republican strategy for reaching male voters aims more at, you know, the cost of food at the stores, the cost of gasoline at the pump, the border, your job, you know, stuff like that. Philip J., right around the corner's favorite segment of the day, social media from Socialista. All right, 827, Philip J., what do you got going here, social media from Socialist?
Oh, all the Democrats that now love Dick Cheney. The social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. One of the people I follow on social media, this guy named Tom Elliott, he's with an outfit called Grabian Media, but they're kind of like a cable news, political watchdog. Yeah. And they grab all these archive, exactly. They grab all these archive moments of politicians and the pundits and the talking heads saying stuff 8 years ago that's now in direct contradiction to what they're saying now. And here's Rachel Maddow talking about she was so upset with Dick Cheney's policy on foreign policy and war. That's why she started writing books.
I am someone fundamentally opposed to the politics of Liz Cheney and her father, Dick Cheney. I literally started writing books in the first place more than a decade ago because I had so much to get off my chest about what I thought was wrong with the Cheney family approach to war and foreign policy.
So there you go. They hate Dick Cheney. Now they love Dick Cheney and they love Liz, Lynn Cheney and stuff like that. So
Liz Cheney. Lynn Cheney's cool. Right. She's a genuine historian in her own right, is the wife of Dick Cheney. Liz Cheney is the political chameleon they spawned.
Politics, yeah. Politics makes strange bedfellows, right? Mm. Right, Rachel? The Washington Post decided not to do any sort of presidential endorsement. Ted Lieu is a U.S. congressman. Is he from Hawaii or California?
No, California.
It is California.
Very
okay.
predictable.
And he was a West Coast guy. Yeah,
he's
exactly.
out there like with Pramila Jayapal.
Exactly. Ted Lieu posted, "The first step towards fascism is when the free press cowers in fear," after the report last Friday that the Washington Post would not make an endorsement. So there's a healthy perspective from Congressman Ted Lieu. And I only got time for one more, but I want to get this one in. It's not necessarily socialist on social media, but you played this clip.
I thought the first sign of that was when the media conspire with government and big tech companies to censor opinions on social media.
You put that on the checklist as well for Ted. Ted does not remember those months and years of our recent history.
Probably doesn't think it through to that level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I know you played the clip a little bit earlier of Kamala Harris campaigning in Houston, Texas, and the crowd that turned out to be disappointed when they were, at least it was inferred that Beyonce was going to be there, which I think a lot of the crowd thought meant Beyonce's
no,
going to perform.
It was implied, and that not only she was she going to be there, but they implied that she would be performing, and when she didn't show, the crowd was not pleased.
Yeah. So I'm looking at a post from a Trump supporter online. It says, "Trump sold out Madison Square Garden and didn't have to lie about a free Beyonce concert in order to do it." So there's my final entry for the
By the way, that's the second time they said that Beyonce was going to perform and didn't. They did that during the Democratic National Convention on the night that Kamala spoke.
In Chicago, right?
Yeah. Didn't work the second time around either.
Don't have money left to pay her. It's all in advertising.
When we come back, Brian Haywood, the man behind the four initiatives for most of this election. Boy, those initiatives have a lot of support, but is that support beginning to disappear and wither in the face of all this media against the initiatives? We'll ask him straight up as the commute continues.
Cruising, official today, last day cruise ship season, Seattle, John and Phil and everybody. 278 departures to Alaska, 1.75 million passengers.
How about that?
That's why you got more of a view of the mountains.
See you next spring.
And the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. By the way, did you guys hear what happened on Friday at the Kamala Harris rally in Houston? I mean, we already told you about how the crowd started booing when they thought Beyonce was going to perform, and instead all she did was introduce Kamala and then left the stage, and people started booing Kamala because they came to hear Beyonce. Then during the rally, to spotlight their support for abortion rights, they had 10 abortion doctors, you know, wearing white coats, who were on stage. And one of them was speaking surrounded by other doctors. And the lead guy, his name is Dr. Richard Ivey, he's an OBGYN, was at the podium and making abortion rights remarks when someone in the crowd had what's called a medical emergency. That usually means a heart attack or a stroke or something bad. And so, luckily, there's 10 doctors right there. And all they did was look around at each other. And the doctor kept on talking about the abortion issue. And then eventually, you know, people were waving and said, hey, we got a problem over here. He said, I think someone needs medical assistance over here. And he pointed toward the emergency. But none of the doctors went to see if they could help. They all just stayed on the stage. Oh, goodness. Anyway, all right. Let's bring it back home local. You know that KVI listeners have played a huge role in championing, supporting, signing, and getting their friends, neighbors, and colleagues at work to sign the initiatives to get on the ballot, the initiative that would give you freedom to choose natural gas for your home or business. The initiative that would strike down the capital gains tax and eliminate the mandate, the mandated payroll tax on long-term care. And, of course, would eliminate the invisible gas tax, the carbon tax on gasoline. Four big initiatives. And the other side has poured in tens of millions of dollars. Brian Haywood's actually done the math. We're going to ask him about it here in a few seconds. And we've got KVI listeners saying, hey, I'm watching TV, and all I see are ads against the initiatives. And we got a mailman who said, John, I've seen more no campaign mailers than yes mailers. What's going on? They're pushing hard for the no vote. They're getting worried. Should they be getting worried? Well, Brian Haywood, the champion of Let's Go Washington, the man responsible more than any other for these four initiatives, he's joining me this morning. How are you? Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Good morning. Doing well. How are you?
Great. Great. So I read what Eric in Puyallup said. I'm a mail carrier. I've seen more no flyers, campaign mailers than yes. And Chris, KVI listener from Pierce County, said, where is the advertising for the yes on the four initiatives? All I see are no ads. And I've gotten three mailers for no, but none for yes. They're starting to get worried. Brian Haywood, should they be getting worried?
No, they shouldn't be getting worried, but they shouldn't be sitting back relaxed either. They've got to get their friends out to vote. I think there's a couple of things. I did a bunch of testing in previous years on the effectiveness of mailers and getting people to show up, turn out, do things.
Yes.
And my test showed that the spending a lot of money on mailers, which every consultant wants you to do because they get a piece of it, is not the most effective method.
Okay.
And so we're knocking on doors, actually, which is much, much more effective to talk to people and get them to talk to their friends. We're targeting very specific neighborhoods. We did a mathematical model, a voter model, where we identified neighborhoods that would have a high propensity, a high likelihood for people to not be aware of the initiatives, but willing to vote for them if they knew about them. We did a survey, and then we matched it against our, you know, we've got a database now of 1 million people, and we know which ones they voted for and where they live. And so we can match that and say, okay, here's a neighborhood where people are probably not likely to know about it and would vote for us. And so we're doing ads on cable, we're doing digital ads, we're knocking on doors, and we're doing texting. But if people really are concerned and they want to send us, send in a donation, they can do that as well, and we'll increase the number of ads that we've got. It's all of this costs money, and we're up against a $35 million juggernaut on the other side.
Is it now $35
million? $35 million.
Wow. I thought you were the rich guy trying to buy an election.
It's hard to fight against Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer and Microsoft and Amazon and British Petroleum and Nick Hanauer.
Yeah. How much has Nick put in? Wow. This is really
I mean, just that group alone has put in probably more than our whole spending. Just that group right there.
My goodness. Okay, so people are watching all this, and they're saying, oh, no, we could actually lose these initiatives. What can I do? What can I do? What can they do?
Well, there's three or four things. So this week, if they go to letsgowa.com, we have an event today down in Sumner. We've got one tomorrow in Bellevue, and then another one Friday in Seattle. We've got gas station events. And it's sort of a twofer. Come and get cheap gas. Tell your friends about it. Get people there. That's one. We have a call center that they can volunteer for if you go to our website, letsgowa.com. There's a call center if you don't want to get outside and just want to call people. And we're switching our efforts now from informing people to more get out the vote.
Sure. Because you've identified your supporters, the votes you need to win. I really want to encourage KVI listeners, take advantage of that offer to volunteer for their call center, because you could do that at home. And, you know, from the warmth and convenience of your home. So they need people to call. By all means, please sign up and call. If you go to letsgowashington.com, letsgowashington.com, across the top, there's a bunch of tabs. One of them says volunteer, and call centers is specifically what they're asking you to sign up for. So sign up for the call center. We got 1 week left.
Yeah,
every phone should be manned. Every person should be called repeatedly until they vote. Right, Brian?
Exactly. Sometimes it takes as many as 7 touches before people will take action. So we're trying to hit them as many times. And the other thing people can do really is talk to their neighbors about this. Again, it's not a Republican-Democrat issue.
Yeah.
Go talk to 5 neighbors and make sure they vote. And in this state, if they're willing, you can collect their ballot for them and go mail it in.
I voted last week. I have never voted 2 weeks before an election. I did this week. Our whole family has now voted, Brian. And I'll tell you one thing that does is it when you vote, they don't say how you voted, but they do indicate that you did vote. You have cast your ballot, so you no longer get bothered with text messages and phone calls.
That's right.
Which means they can aim their time texting and calling identified supporters who haven't yet voted. So that's one more reason, if you already know how you're voting, to get out there and do it quickly. That's what the Trump people are saying, is vote early. Don't hold on to your ballot. That was wrong strategy 4 years ago. Vote early. Get it done with. So I want to encourage, whether it's for local offices or local initiatives or presidential race, regardless of what side you're on, vote early. All right. Yep. So they can sign up for that call center, right, Brian?
Absolutely. And we need as much help as we can get to push this final week.
All right. I want to push people out to the wonderful town of Sumner today. That's Sumner today. How would you like to have really cheap gasoline, the cheapest in the state? It'll be at the Jackson's. Is that a Shell station out there? Jackson's station on 166th Avenue.
That's right.
166th Avenue East in Sumner today from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Again, that's from 11 to 1 today in Sumner. Gasoline cheaper than anywhere else in the state. So if you're running on empty or you're just halfway full, you may as well get a great discount, about $1 a gallon. And do it today between 11 and 1 in Sumner at the Jackson's Shell station on 166th Avenue East. Now, tomorrow, they're going to be doing this in Bellevue on Richards Road at Man Petroleum. And we'll tell you more about that one tomorrow. But that's going to be in Bellevue tomorrow on Richards Road. So if you're, you know, a lot further south and east of Sumner, then that's where you want to hang out to get really cheap gas on Tuesday the 29th. But today it's in Sumner from 11 to 1 at the Jackson's Shell in East Sumner. Go ahead, Brian. Parting word here.
Well, the most important thing everybody can remember is vote yes, pay less, and tell your neighbors vote yes, pay less. And when they say, how do I vote on these confusing initiatives that the Attorney General helped write the ballot title for, vote yes, pay less.
Yes, that's it exactly. Vote yes, pay less. Vote yes to get rid of the bad stuff. Vote yes to repeal terrible laws and taxes. To get rid of them, you vote yes. I want to get rid of them. Vote yes. Pay less. We're going to be saying that going in and out of every hour of the John Carlson Show for the remainder of this election. We got 8 days left, Brian.
8 days. Well, you know, we should talk on another time. We should talk about Reuven Carlisle's involvement with Clean and Prosperous. $40 million going to Reuven Carlisle.
We want to do that tomorrow. I know where you're going on this, and it is stunning what you've uncovered here. So if you can, we'd like to make time on tomorrow's show.
That sounds great.
Brian Haywood, the leader of letsgowashington.com. That's letsgowashington.com. In addition to that massive rally, Madison Square Garden, over three times more people outside the venue than inside the venue. Huge, huge crowd. Donald Trump also appeared in an interview with Joe Rogan, who has 14.5 million people signed up for his podcast. Here's part of what they talked about.
The rebels are Republicans now. They're like, you want to be a rebel, you want to be punk rock, you want to like buck the system, you're a conservative now. That's how crazy. And then the liberals are now pro-silencing criticism. They're pro-censorship online. They're talking about regulating free speech, and they're regulating the First Amendment. It's bananas to watch.
Joe, they come after their political opponent.
Well, they do.
I got more guys. I always say, you know, I kid, but I'm not kidding. I've been investigated more than Alphonse Capone. He was the meanest of them all. He'd kill you in 2 seconds if he didn't like you, right? I've been under investigation more than Alphonse Capone, only because it's political opponent stuff. And I've won. I won the big case in Florida. I'm winning the other stuff. You win. But you know what they did? They did something that's only done in third world countries. They came after their political opponent.
Yes.
I could have put Crooked Hillary in jail.
Well, not only that, but they're weaponizing it by saying that that's what you're going to do once you get in office.
Isn't it great?
By ignoring what they're doing right now. It's crazy.
I heard it. Somebody was defending me today. They said, no, that's... They say, that's what you're doing to him. They're going, he's going to put us in jail. He's going to invest.
That's what you're doing.
What you're doing to him.
Yeah.
It's called projection. They are warning America that Donald Trump will do to his opponents what Donald Trump's opponents are trying to do to him right now. Wreck him financially. Wreck his reputation, throw him in jail. That's what they're now doing. And that's what they say Donald Trump will do to us. That's what makes him a fascist. He would do what we're trying to do to him. I don't think he would do that, by the way. But it shows, again, the air of desperation on the other side. Boy, so much more to talk about. We just got to wait 21 more hours to do it. See you tomorrow.